Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. This is the show where we talk to the people behind the productivity. I'm your host, Eric Fisher. This week, I am talking again with best-selling author Charles Duhigg, author of The Power of Habit, and he is here to talk about his new book, Smarter, Faster, Better, The Secrets of Being Productive in Life and Business. And he's going to talk about how those two books connect, which is really awesome in a sense that they kind of go together like a 1-2 punch of productivity. And what was even more fascinating is the fact that there is a killer app included in this episode that you will find out about, that Charles will tell you about. So keep listening for that quote of what he says the killer app is, and has always been, for that matter. Before we get to that, I want to talk to you about another killer app, FreshBooks. It's a super intuitive tool that makes creating and sending invoices and tracking your income and outgoing payments extremely easy. If you're out there doing work for clients and you want to get paid, FreshBooks is the easiest way to do it, because you can create your invoices in FreshBooks with the time that you've already tracked that you've worked on the project in FreshBooks, add your own logo and color scheme to your invoices in FreshBooks, know whether or not when you've sent the invoice to them that they've checked it and or seen it and opened it in FreshBooks, send them payment reminders automatically and you don't have to chase them down because you're using FreshBooks, use the mobile app to track and take pictures of your receipts to organize them for later, which, come on, if you're creating expense reports or claiming expenses at tax time, that's going to be the killer app right there for you. And all along, from start to finish, from doing your work to invoicing for your work to tracking where you're spending the money that you made off your work, FreshBooks is there to track your incoming and outgoing cash flow, your expenses, your time tracking, the ability to do all this while you're out in mobile or in front of your desktop. You got to try it out. FreshBooks right now is offering a month of unrestricted use to all the Beyond the To-Do List listeners. It's totally free. You don't need a credit card. All you got to do is go to freshbooks.com/to-do. That's freshbooks.com/TODO. And make sure to enter to-do in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/TODO. And enter to-do, T-O-D-O, in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thanks again to FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Now enjoy this conversation between myself and Charles Duhigg. Well, this week it is my privilege to welcome back to the show Charles Duhigg. Charles, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So you just came out with a book called Smarter, Faster, Better, The Secrets of Being Productive in Life and Business. And if there was ever a book made for my audience, it's this one. So, yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. Last time you were on, we were talking about the power of habit, and I'm curious, what drove you to move from the power of habit to being smarter, faster, and better?
They're actually kind of related. You know, when the power of habit came out in 2012, I'm a reporter at the New York Times, and so the same year that the power of habit came out, I was working on a series for the Times about working about Apple and as a lens for looking at the global economy. And, you know, working conditions in the factories that made iPads and iPhones in China and sort of other topics. And that year was professionally fairly satisfying and successful for me. Power of Habit did better than I had expected. I found a lot of readers. The series that I was working on for the Times eventually went on to win the Pulitzer Prize. It was a pretty good year. And I would come home every night during that year and say to my wife, you know, if this is what success feels like, then like sign me back up for failure. Cause like, this is terrible, because every night I would come home and I would have, you know, 150 emails to deal with that evening. And, you know, 3 or 4 things that I had meant to get done earlier in the day that I hadn't gotten done that I now needed to take care of. And it was just so kind of overwhelming how much work I needed to do. And I felt like the faster and faster I was running, the farther I was falling behind. And I wanted to understand why that was true, but also why there were other people who seemed to be so much more on top of things. Other people who, you know, also only had 24 hours in each day, but seemed like they were getting more done with less stress. And so I started reaching out to all these researchers and asking them, what do we know about personal productivity? And what they said is, you're exactly right. There are people who are much more productive than everyone else. But the key is, it's not necessarily that they're working more or that they're making bigger sacrifices. It's that they've basically trained themselves to think differently in very specific ways. And that different kind of thinking when it comes to setting goals and remaining focused on priorities and understanding how to use teams to maximize your own and the team's effectiveness, that kind of thinking allows us to become more productive, to get more done and get the important things done. And as a result, to ultimately end up being much more successful.
So it sounds like you, like me, found that you had productivity pain points and decided to make the next thing that you do a tool that while you work on it, you can learn from all these people about how to overcome your productivity shortcomings.
That's exactly right. And I think that in addition, that there was this desire to kind of understand how the time that we're living through is changing. You know, it's pretty widely acknowledged that we're living through this economic revolution right now that will be seen as being as profound as the Industrial Revolution or the Agrarian Revolution. And one of the things that's interesting about economic revolutions is that it's not uncommon for people to feel very anxious, even if you're very successful, living through that period. We know this from like diaries from, you know, 100 years ago or 300 years ago. And each economic revolution is essentially a debate over what productivity actually is, right? People basically making different judgments or making different wagers on what is more or less productive. And so I wanted to understand that because it seems like this is part of the story of our time and of our lives, is understanding how productivity is changing. And in particular, in the book, I found that there are these eight characteristics that are disproportionately much more important now than they were in the past. Right. One of the chapters, for instance, is about innovation, how you make creativity, the creative process, more productive. And creativity and innovation is radically more valuable today just as a day-to-day skill than it was, you know, 50 or 100 years ago, where you could have, you know, one or two good ideas a decade and you would be pretty successful. Today, you really have to come up with pretty good ideas almost on a weekly or monthly basis. And so understanding how your brain functions and what allows you to be more or less creative is actually much more important now than it was in the past.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Sounds like in a lot of the book, you're moving forward in training us to think outside the box of what we've traditionally accepted as the true meaning of productivity and to think about it in a different way and even redefine that word. What did you think of, or, you know, what was your personal definition of the word productivity before you started the book, and how did that change?
So I think before I started the book, I think I probably didn't think about the definition as much as I should have. And this is one of the things that we know about the most productive people, is that they tend to spend a lot of time thinking about what productivity genuinely means and what success genuinely means, right? This is actually one of the distinguishing characteristics of intensely productive people is that they've thought more about what productivity actually is. And part of that is recognizing that productivity changes from day to day and place to place. So like a productive Wednesday morning might be one where you drop your kid off at school as early as possible, rush to the office, get through all your emails, start meetings. But a productive Friday might be one where you can walk your child to school and have a conversation with them and do that without being stressed about what's going on at your desk. And so people who are much clearer on how they define productivity and success differently and goals differently from day to day and situation to situation are people who tend to be much more successful, because instead of being reactive, they're much more proactive. And this is actually the underlying idea that guides most productivity studies, is that the most productive people, what they tend to have in common across these sort of eight characteristics, or even more broadly, is that they have what are known as contemplative routines, practices in their life that push themselves to think just like half an inch deeper about what their goals ought to be and what their priorities should be and how they should interact with other people. And just that small amount of additional thought and contemplation, that tends to make people much, much more productive, which is surprising until you look at your own life and realize most of us spend a lot of our time being busy, right? We're reactive, we're replying to emails, or we're responding to colleagues who have asked for help, or we're trying to juggle five things at once. And it tends to crowd out these moments of deeper thought. But that's what the productive people do, is that they tend to find ways to force deeper thought back into their days and to realize, like, I don't actually have to reply to those emails, right? On average, like in these studies that were done, the most productive people tend to hit delete about 7 times more frequently than everyone else. They just respond to far fewer emails. And like, but that's somebody has to have sort of the presence of mind to say, oh, no, I can ignore all these emails that are coming in. If I don't respond, these people will learn to solve this problem on their own. And that's really the thing, is that can you find ways to build contemplative practices, these routines that force you to think a little bit more deeply? Can you build those into your life in a way that helps you focus on which goals are really important and to maintain those priorities rather than simply become reactive?
One of the things that we've kind of moved on in terms of the revolutions that you're describing is we've moved way beyond not just the first level, but 2 or 3 levels beyond just living in survival mode. Most people that are listening to this can afford to listen to this because they have a device to listen to it, and you know they're pretty set as far as their needs go. They aren't in survival mode. They've got shelter, food, and all of that. And so their subconscious isn't constantly saying, you must do this to survive. We now have this ability to, in other words, passively focus on just doing more than just being alive. But you're saying you have to be more than conscious, or subconscious. You have to be conscious about what you're doing. You have to actively engage.
I think that's exactly right. And you had asked about the power of habit and the link. And this gets to the power of the link between habits and this insight on productivity, which is that, habits are a decision that your brain makes and then essentially stops making but continues acting on. So habits are very near to subconscious. They occur essentially without our conscious thought. And they're actually referred to in psychology as automaticity. And habits are very, very useful. And having the right habits is very powerful. And people can design their own habits. That's what the power of habit is all about, is understanding how to diagnose and design the right habits in your lifestyle. But productivity is different. It's almost exactly the opposite, which is productivity is about saying there are certain places where I don't want my subconscious to take over. I don't want to just react. Instead, I want to make deliberate choices, because those choices will allow me to pursue the goals that are most important, or chase innovations that are actually, sort of life-changing for me, as opposed to just incremental change, or to work with teams where the team, rather than a collection of individuals, becomes sort of this whole unit. And in the book, if people are familiar with this, there's an excerpt in the New York Times Magazine about how Google studied teams for years to figure out what the most successful team is. Or in the book, we tell the story of the making of Frozen, or how Disney creates an innovative process, or why losing focus contributed to the crash of Air France Flight 447. But in each of those cases, what's going on is that somebody is building a habit that forces them to be more deliberate, more conscious, to think a little bit more deeply. And in that respect, what the books together hopefully do is that they teach people, look, here's the times when you can go into the automatic mode. When it comes to exercise, when it comes to diet, like, you don't have to think about that all the time. If you create the right habits, you're going to be happier, and your autopilot's going to take you down a great path. But there's sometimes that you don't want autopilot to go on, and you need to build habits to force yourself to think in those situations. And if you do that, you're really much closer to success.
I think that one of the things that ties that, it's kind of the in-between of the power of habit and or as you're putting it here, kind of autopilot and manual, is this idea that you want to try things and then pay attention to what happens so that you can then make decisions about maybe which habits you want to put on autopilot, and then maybe which things you need to be on manual, and which goals you want to set.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And a big distinguishing characteristic of people who are uniquely productive is that they tend to see their choices not in terms of binary outcomes, not in terms of success or failure, but rather they see their choices as experiments. And one of the things about an experiment, as any scientist knows, is that if an experiment performs exactly as you expect, then it's a terrible experiment, right? You conduct experiments essentially to see what's going to happen in the face of the unknown, not to simply confirm what you already know. And so as a result, if you start looking at your choices as experiments, then the fact that something is unexpected or that something goes awry or that you can learn from your experience, it's much more possible because all of a sudden you start saying, look, I made this choice and I'm conducting an experiment and I'm learning from the data that's being generated by it. And to your point, a big part of that experimentation is what things should I make automatic and what things should I force myself to think about? And it's really only people who experiment with those decisions who are in a position to really yield insights as to what really matters.
What kind of insight do you have in terms of how should we approach deciding what experiments to do or how to even set those up?
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to deal with. But one of my favorite examples, for instance, is, trying to figure out how to write to-do lists, right? Or how to create priorities. So there's actually a huge amount of research on the correct way to write a to-do list and most people, it turns out, do it wrong. So most people, including myself, before I started reporting this book, most people write to-do lists as essentially an external memory aid, right? You write down a list of tasks that you want to get done, today or tomorrow. And essentially, you just write them in the order that they occur to you. And sometimes, and about 15% of people will actually write down things that they have already done at the top of their list because it feels so good when you sit down at your desk to cross that thing off the top of the list, right? To feel like you have the sense of accomplishment right away. But what researchers have found is that that's exactly the wrong way to use a to-do list. That's actually what they call that is using a to-do list for mood repair as opposed to for productivity. Because what a to-do list really should be is it should be something that reminds you of your priorities as opposed to simply an external memory aid for tasks. And so the question becomes, how do you create a to-do list to prompt you and remind you about your priorities? Well, what the research says is that one of the most effective ways is at the top of your to-do list to write one big major goal. They refer to this in the literature as a stretch goal. Right? What's the biggest, most important thing I want to get done today and this week and this month? And if you write that at the top of your to-do list, then every time you look at your to-do list, you're essentially being reminded, like, here's my most important goal. And if what I'm doing right now does not correspond with my biggest goal, then I need to ask myself, like, why am I doing this thing? If my biggest, most important goal is to write this memo that's going to sort of change my entire company, and for the last 45 minutes I've been responding to emails, then I need to ask myself, like, why am I responding to emails if it doesn't help me write this memo? What else should I be doing that would help me write this memo? What's a better use of time right now? And this is an example of how these kind of insights can help shape how we behave in a way that allows us to prompt ourselves to become more productive.
Well, and it even touches on one of the biggest key factors of that, even if we have maybe spent the time doing more manual or deeper thought on what it is we're doing or what it is we need to be doing, and we even know what the next step is or what the in other words, one of the things we have decided is what we need to do now, what we need to do next, and what we need to do to reach our goals. But we can feel unmotivated by looking at that why goal, that stretch goal, over and over again. It helps with motivation.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, there's a chapter in the book about motivation, right? Because we know a lot about the neurology of motivation now. And exactly to the point you just raised, the why is incredibly important. One of the things that we know is that there's a part of our brain that's a subsection of the basal ganglia, which is essentially where motivation stems from. And it becomes more active when we feel like we're in control, when we're making a choice as opposed to simply following an order, and when we are able to take that choice and link it up with goals that are important to us or personally meaningful, when we answer that question of why. the power of this is kind of surprising, right? Because it's something that we all know is intuitively true, but it's very easy to lose sight of. Like, one researcher I was talking to, he's an oncologist. He said that he hated grading students' papers. It's like the most boring activity on earth. And so before he graded students' papers, he would always go through this mantra to sort of motivate himself, which is he would tell himself, okay, if I grade students' papers, then the university can collect tuition dollars. And if the university collects tuition dollars, then they can pay for my research. And if they can pay for my research, I can cure cancer. And if I can cure cancer, I can save people's lives. And he found that this worked. This got him motivated to start grading students' papers. But what's crazy is, like, this guy has, like, an MD, PhD, right? Like, you wouldn't think that this is the type of person who has to, like, remind himself of why grading students' papers is important. But that why, it's so easy to forget the why. It's so easy to, like, just kind of gloss over it. That if we have these practices that remind us of the why, then that's how we motivate ourselves to do hard things.
Yeah, I was going to say, even to be able to tackle the things that are on our to-do list that have to be done, even though we don't necessarily want to do them, we will then want to do them in a sense because they lead us to the accomplishment of the goal.
That's exactly right. That's exactly correct.
So how would you prescribe we start setting up a to-do list or a decision-making system where we know what we need to do on the micro level, but then also on the macro level, and we can kind of get to that place where we know what productivity means on a day where we drop our kid off, but then on a different day where we walk them to school?
Well, so I think the biggest thing is to sit down and actually think to yourself, like, what is your biggest stretch goal, right? Like, what is the thing, if you could only get one thing done today and one thing done this week and one thing done this month, what would you want it to be? And part of that is about having time in your own life to actually think about those things. And you have to create that time, right? So one of the things that's really interesting is that when they look at time studies of how people use their time now compared to 30 years ago, about 10 to 12% of people's time in general 30 years ago would be categorized as boredom, right? People were standing in lines, or they were waiting on phones, or they were walking to one place or another. Something was going on where they basically were kind of bored and they had time to think about their lives. Today, I mean, think about the last time you were standing on a line and you were bored. Like, that doesn't happen anymore, right? Not for more than like 10 or 15 seconds, because as soon as you're standing on a line, you reach in your pocket and you pull out your smartphone and you start checking your emails or surfing the web. And so as a result, we don't have as much time to essentially allow our minds to wander and to think about what are our stretch goals, what actually mattered to us. So the first step in figuring out what your stretch goal is just scheduling some time where you can allow yourself to basically just think, to just kind of be bored, and to think about, like, what's most important to me? Like, what do I honestly want to get done this month? Like, at the end of this month, if I get X done, what will make me feel like it was a good month? You know, and there's probably a couple of things. Probably it's like, you know, I exercised at least twice a week, and I spent at least twice a week some, like, an hour of quality time with my kids. And I got, you know, these three memos done that I think are important, or five meetings or whatever it is. Like, just having the time to figure out what those things are, that's the first step. That's really, really important. And then we know that once you start thinking about that, you'll tend to visualize what you actually hope to get done, which is known within psychology as building mental models. And this is at the core of how people focus their attention, is building mental models. Because if you can build a mental model, what you're doing is you're training your brain almost subconsciously to determine what environmental details to pay attention to and which ones to safely ignore. And once you can do that, it's much easier at your office or at home to pay attention to the right things and to ignore distractions. But you have to have some time. You have to have practices in your life, whether that means like you're taking a walk on Monday mornings, or you're, you know, just turning off the TV and like shutting your door on Sunday afternoon, or you're taking a long bath on a Wednesday night, something that allows you to think about what you actually care about and just to like kind of have some time to be bored so that your mind starts floating and focusing on the things that actually are important to you.
So in other words, we almost need to stop agitating our brain so much and let it sit and simmer, and then we'll start to discover what it is we really want to do and have, you know, maybe passion for.
That's exactly right.
How did this play out for you as you were writing the book and you were discovering this research? Obviously, the friction there where the rubber meets the road, because, again, as we talked when we first started, is the pain point of, that instigated the writing of this book. So how did you incorporate these into your life? Any good examples or stories?
So it's kind of revolutionized a little bit how I spend my time. So every morning now, I write a new to-do list, and at the top of it, I put my stretch goal. And that forces me a little bit to, like, reconsider, like, is my stretch goal the same from day to day? Or did I learn something yesterday that makes me come up with a new stretch goal for today or for this week or for this month? And that's part of my routine, is that I now sort of write that list. It only takes, like, 5 minutes every morning. But it helps me really think about, like, what do I want to get done today? And when I live in Brooklyn and I work in Manhattan, so when I'm taking the subway in, I used to read my iPad or check email or something like that. And now what I try and do is I just, for like just 10 minutes, I like close my eyes and I try and visualize my day. So like, what do I want to get done from 9 to 10? What do I want to get done before lunch? What's the most important thing that I want to do after lunch? How do I prioritize and think about like all the, what the potential obstacles that might come up are? And again, you know, there's these sort of eight ideas in the book, these eight things that researchers have found are sort of critical right now to increasing productivity. For each of those eight, I try and do something on a daily or every other day basis. Like the way I run team meetings are very different now. We spend the first 10 minutes talking about what's going on in our lives and sort of, you know, why we're at this meeting and what our goals and aspirations are, because we know that that'll help create psychological safety, which tends to help a team come together. I think about innovation as a process now instead of waiting for a brainstorm or a great idea to emerge. So it has had some significant impacts on how I behave. But I think the biggest, most important one is that I now indulge these desires or these practices that can seem kind of eccentric, but which I recognize now are what allow me to think more deeply. I used to edit manuscripts when I was on the subway, and I would miss my stop all the time. And like, I would kind of beat up on myself, because, like, this is, like, the dumbest mistake on earth to make, to, like, miss my subway stop. I've been taking the same subway stop for, like, 5 years. But now I recognize that, like, missing my subway stop, that's actually, like, a good sign, because that means that I'm sort of so engrossed in the manuscript, I'm so much in this flow state, that I'm really getting some important editing done. And even just that shift in perspective, instead of beating up on myself for missing a subway stop, instead recognizing it as a sign that I'm doing something really at a kind of elite level because I'm so involved in the text and understanding the text, even that's just kind of a recognition that providing myself with space to think more deeply is the critical component for productivity. And this has been true throughout time. The killer app has always been thinking. The people who are most successful have always been the ones who figure out how to get themselves to think more deeply. And so a lot of what I do now is about letting myself, encouraging myself, forcing myself to think more deeply, because that is what is going to allow me to be successful.
I think that's a great place to land on this episode. I love that we all just need to take a step back and or maybe block out some time on our calendar where we are uninterrupted and we are not busy, but we allow ourselves to be bored.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Charles, for being here. And everybody, the book is Smarter, Faster, Better, The Secrets of Being Productive in Life and Business. And it's available at all the major booksellers and online. Thanks for being here, Charles.
Take care.
So did you find it? The quote where Charles Duhigg gives you the key to what the killer app is and has always been. Okay, if you didn't find it, it was thinking. Plain and simple, it's thinking. It's taking time to think. It's pausing to think. It's blocking out time to think. It's thinking deeper. It's thinking without distraction. It's It's thinking, guys. And I just love that. My takeaway from that is just, we've got to block out that time. We've got to think. We've got to set aside time to calm our minds, to do the brain dump if we have to, GTD style. Get it all out there on a pad with a pen, or type as much as you need to, whatever. Talk it out even. Stand in front of a microphone or your phone. We've all got microphones built into our mobile phones these days. Just do it. Get rid of those thoughts, get them out, and then think about them, and then design that life and that to-do list. Thinking is the killer app, and it has always been that way. I hope that you will also check out the other killer app of FreshBooks. Again, it is the killer app when it comes to tracking and making sure you get your incoming cash flow through the process of tracking your time, monitoring your expenses, organizing your expenses on mobile, on the go, and tracking your cash flow on its way out the door, hopefully on the things that you not only need to do, but want to do. FreshBooks is there as that killer app for you. And again, you can get it free for 30 days. Go check it out at freshbooks.com/to-do. Put to-do in the how did you hear about us section. There's no credit card required for that trial. You have no excuse. Go check it out. Freshbooks.com/to-do and enter T-O-D-O in that how did you hear about us section. Let FreshBooks know that you tried it out because you like this show. I hope that you take some time this week to try out both those killer apps, Thinking and FreshBooks, and I hope to see you next time on the next episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I am Eric Fisher. Thank you for listening. I will see you next episode. Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Theorize over the TV shows Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, and Under the Dome. Laugh with our clean comedy, delve into science fiction and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.